Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica with Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, and I have a bunch of guests today. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'll start. My name is James Hutter. I'm the president of the Nassau County Library Association, and I'm a technology librarian for the Port Washington Public Library here on Long Island.
I am David Ecker. I'm the director of iCreate at Stony Brook University. And we're all excited about making on Stony Brook on Long Island and how it's making a difference throughout the nation.
I'm Chris DeCristofaro. I am the technology librarian at the Sachem Public Library. I also manage the studio at Sachem Public Library, which is our makerspace, along with our recording studio and all the other good stuff that we have. And I also am co-host of the podcast, The Library Pros.
Which is an awesome podcast. So welcome everybody. Thank you so much. And we might have another guest joining us soon, but we'll get started. So the reason we're doing this this episode is to talk about what libraries have been doing during the COVID-19 crisis. We've been doing a bunch of special episodes for Turn the Page. Some of them have been informational. Some of them have been entertainment. But this one, I think, is just important in general because libraries are really thought of so much still as quiet institutions, you know, just this building that holds books. And we've been so much more for so long. And there's been an initiative from libraries to use our maker spaces for something beyond what we've been using them for. So my first question is, so what types of equipment have you all seen in maker spaces in libraries?
Dave, why don't you go first?
All right. So what we've seen is we've seen lots of changes from the actual equipment, from 3D printing to laser cutting to Cricut technology, which is vinyl cutting, to expanding in all kinds of other ways, to Arduinos. And it's all this hands-on technology that people are really able to use and develop these skills that are for that next generation. If you start thinking about where we're going for the future, having hands-on skills and doing it is so important as we think about what's going on with technology and even the technology change. And then you're even seeing it now, we're doing it with all kinds of virtual technologies, iPhones, everybody's got an iPhone or an Android in their pocket. How would they integrate into this whole ecosystem of developing their maker spaces throughout the community?
So at our library, we have Prusa 3D printers, which are filament printers. We have a Creality CR10, which is a larger form 3D printer, which is also filament. We also have two resin printers, which prints with liquid resin. We also have a laser engraver. We have a recording studio. We have Cricuts. We have a CNC machine. We do green screen. We do VR. We have a whole number of things. So one thing that's really kind of cool is in introducing this new technology, you get to engage the patron in a different way. And now with COVID-19, we have to reimagine what we're doing. So we're coming up with different strategies and things to continue that service, but yet do it in a different way. And, you know, what's really been interesting, and, you know, I don't want to speak for Roger Reyes from Suffolk Cooperative Library System, but he's been doing some really cool stuff. We'll get into that a little bit later about printing headgear and stuff. But yeah, libraries have changed a lot, and we're doing a lot more for the better.
Definitely. And James, what about Port Washington?
So we have a few things. We're actually in the midst of building our makerspace, but we do actually have a lot of equipment that we've had available for public use. So we've got two filament-based 3D printers. We also have a resin 3D printer. We have a whole sort of like bank of computers that have the Adobe Creative Cloud suite on them for software that allows people to do web design or video creation and things like that. And we had just built the recording space and we were just about to open it right before the pandemic happened. But it's going to be useful, I think, when we get our staff back in there. We're talking about using it for broadcasting and things like that to get content out to our community.
It's funny you say that because I hear from, I mean, just in general and not just, you know, with that, so many libraries are saying just before the pandemic happened, we were supposed to X, Y, Z. And it really has thrown us for a loop for a while. And I think in a way it's going to continue because libraries are always expanding in what we do. And we have to move with what's going on. So yeah, Syosset, we have 3D printers, we have some Crickets, we have, you know, some computers with editing software. And it's interesting how things come up. I remember when everybody was obsessing over fidget spinners, like literally that was the mm-hmm. only thing we were 3D printing constantly. It was all about fidget spinners. And, you know, we never thought that that's what it was going to be when we got 3D printers, but there we were. And then that kind of died down a bit. You know, we're always looking to do new things. We have a library of things that we just started, which again, you know, it's probably going to have to take a little bit of a change considering as far as lending things when we do get back in our building for a little bit. But makerspaces have been really key to libraries expanding what we do for a while. My other thought is, before we get into what we're using them for now, in the past, have makerspaces have been used for volunteering and for helping communities?
Yeah, I guess I can start. So one thing that we do is if a child or a student, whether high school, college, elementary school, they have a project that they're doing for school, we don't charge for actually producing whatever it is they need produced. So if it's a third grader doing a report about Lincoln, you know, and they want to print a Lincoln bust, we'll print that Lincoln bust. If it's a college student who needs to, you know, 3D print something or do proof of concept or has a project that can use some of our equipment, then we don't charge. And we don't really charge that much for many of the services that we have. We charge for the engraving. We charge for the 3D printing. We don't charge for Cricut. We don't charge for most of the other things. As long as they bring their own material. So, you know, there's that. But then there's also like this one gentleman who comes in who likes to bring in old boards. And he actually goes and he rummages through when people put out furniture and old lumber and things. And he cuts them into pieces. And he works along with hospice care. And he asks the patients what they like and the doctors what they like. And he says, I need an Islanders logo on this. I need a Rangers logo on this. I need a Yankees or a Red Sox or whatever. And we just engrave it on him. We give it to him for free because we know what he's doing. And then he came up with a pattern of where we actually laser cut crosses and Stars of David for people who are in end stage palliative care. And we make them for him free of charge. So we do that type of thing. And we've also, you know, been involved in some charity stuff with the various chambers of commerce and things like that. So, yeah, it's something – look, libraries are really good at doing that. Of volunteering yeah. and stepping up, and like in crises like this, we step up as well.
For sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, usually we don't. We're mainly helping students who want to innovate in anything else, but we have a club on campus called 3DATrix, which actually 3D prints toys and then goes to the hospital and the child care center and actually educates children in the hospital about how to use it, how the device was made, what their toy is or anything else. And it really gives them an interactive experience with the technology. And we've gotten so many great receptions from it, of how they can interact, how they deal with it. And more they want that kind of interaction. And I think that's where we're going as we look at this.
That's a good point. One of the things I love about 3D printers is that they do encourage people to make toys. You know, we all love our devices, but you know, toys are still kind of super important, and to see someone's eyes light up when they're physically playing with something is awesome. And I love that 3D printers bring that into what we're doing now. James?
Yeah. So as far as volunteering goes, I mean, there's been a few things here and there. We've printed replacement. We have a local historical society, and they maintain like a historical mansion. I remember a few months ago, a few items had gotten broken and they were irreplaceable. We actually printed replicas, and that was kind of cool. So that they were plastic. They weren't wood like the original, but it was a nice thing to put into this historic mansion to still show what something looked like originally. And they were like really thrilled that we were able to do a reproduction like that. As far as volunteering our staff, we've gone out to our local elementary schools to do Tinkercad training. So we may not have been using the printers for like voluntary purposes or voluntary uses, but we've been using our knowledge to really go out in the community, and all the things we've learned from using these printers, we've been able to share with kids and with local teachers.
That's really excellent. One of the things I wanted to bring up is, and I'm not sure exactly how many libraries are doing it, but there are some libraries who have been pairing up with children who need prosthetics and using the 3D printers to fit a custom prosthetic for children. I know Roger Reyes, if he joins later, had some more information about that. But that's just something I wanted to throw in there, because I think it's a really important thing to note that, you know, these things could be used for fun, but they could also be used for help. So what we are here to talk about today is what we have been doing. I know Suffolk County Cooperative Library System is it a 3D printer farm?
Yes. So what happened? And I, since you know, I've been speaking with Roger, I think I can speak a little bit about it. The call went out by Roger after we all started shutting down. And in fact, Dave and I were chatting about the idea too, because Dave, it actually started with Dave with regard to making PPE for our healthcare workers. And Roger put the call out to all the libraries in Suffolk County, and the response he got was amazing and overwhelming, and just, you know, it really made us all feel like, wow, we're really actually helping out. And I believe at the height of when he had the printer farm going over at the Suffolk Cooperative Library System in Bellport, they had something like over 100 printers that were donated or purchased by libraries who didn't have printers for the purpose of doing this. And Dave can expand on the project a little bit more, but all I can tell you about it is that Roger was leading the charge from the public library point of view in Suffolk County. And it really blossomed. And I think the last I had heard, they were up to had made 4,000 face shields.
Yeah, wow. And I know he was dropping off 200 to 300 of the 3D printed rims to us at Stony Brook a day. And it was amazing. He was running 6 days a week and doing it.
Yeah.
So the idea came about how long after libraries started closing their buildings, what was the timeline?
Well, Dave, we started speaking almost immediately after we shut down. I think it was like March 12th or 13th or something like that. And then Roger had jumped in, and I had gotten the two of you together, and then that's when it really started to take off. But it was about a month worth of printing, right?
Yeah, so I can say Chris and I always text back and forth, but I can tell you the day it started for me was March 19th, and was the day when we saw the designs come out that we liked, and we started throwing them on a 3D printer. And then we had a discussion internally about it after we heard this guy upstate 3D printing them. Within that evening, we had a prototype. And then we started to do stuff over that weekend to put our processes in place. Then we were talking to Chris that weekend into next week. And that's when I think it was that Monday, Tuesday, Chris, you and I were saying, okay, how do we do this? And then Roger jumped in and was doing it, I would say immediately that next week, sometime the 25th or 26th of March, we were all in full production.
Yeah, and that was the amazing part about it too, that there was such a, there was a call to arms very quickly from Roger, and the response was overwhelming. I know that Sachem sent five of our Prusa printers, and they had a hodgepodge of all different types, Ultimakers and Prusa and MakerBot, Taz.
Ultimakers.
Yeah.
So yeah, they, and he continues.
And what was interesting is how they grouped them all. So they had all of the Prusas in one spot, and they had labels next to each one so they knew whose printer was whose. And then they had all the MakerBots in one spot and all the Taz in one spot. Then they had the what he liked to call the Island of Misfit Toys, all these off-brand 3D printers that libraries had been using and facilitating for their patrons. So, it, and I was fortunate enough to be asked to come in to troubleshoot a couple of the Prusas one day. And it really was awe-inspiring to see not only the printers working, but Aurora Machiavelli, who works with Roger and the staff that was there, they were social distancing and they were still getting all these printers up and running and keeping them running and keeping on top of which printers were done. And then they started, they actually had an assembly process on the side as well. So it was really an amazing thing to see. And you know, Roger deserves all the credit for the Suffolk public side with it. And it got to a point where they fulfilled the need and they started actually producing for ambulance companies, fire departments. I actually reached out because St. Catherine's physical therapy needed face masks. One of my colleagues at work asked about that. And I got them together with Roger. Roger said, give me the contact info. And then 3 days later, there was a picture on Facebook with their, all their PPE. So, you know, Roger really led the charge in Suffolk County with regard to the public library side. And then Dave really took off because he's over at Stony Brook University and they have probably the largest hospital in Suffolk County, right?
It is the largest hospital in Suffolk. Yeah. But it's also, I think, the Suffolk County Libraries really pitched in, besides the Suffolk County Library System, which Roger runs, because a lot of them gave filament, which I know is just coming out of their pocket, really, to donate and make sure this project goes along. Also, I know Roger had a number of school districts who jumped in also, who dropped off printers there to get involved with the project. And I remember, even for me, I heard from Riverhead and Comptoog, they've all been trying to jump in because by doing it and making a farm like Roger did really makes a difference for us all. So you can generate so much more of these as we do it.
So James, the Nassau County side, how did Nassau County bridge the gap between between 110?
So we actually, you know, we were like a week behind what Suffolk was doing. And when word started getting out what they had cooking up, a colleague of mine kind of threw a hand grenade onto our listserv and said, did you see what Suffolk is doing? Did you see what Stony Brook is doing? And we were all like, whoa. We were trying to wrap our heads around it first because it was just so impressive to see. But then I started reaching out to different people like, how can we do this ourselves? We were already in lockdown mode and a pretty strict lockdown. So we didn't have the possibility of setting up a print farm or anything like that. So we had to think a little bit differently, and we sort of went independent or a little bit distributed in how we set up our printing operation. So I was in talks with Chris pretty often to try to get some inside scoops on what models they were using. We were looking at the internet to see, and this was changing like every day too, so it was a little hard to keep up, but seeing what had been approved for medical use and things like that. And basically, we just kind of coordinated our own effort. And we gave Nassau Libraries like two options. Either if you had staff that were able to go into a building and just retrieve a printer and take it home and they were comfortable printing, great, print this model. I'll give you contacts of who needs face shields and you could drop them off. If you don't have staff that are that knowledgeable, and 3D printers are a little tricky to operate, or you're reluctant about having staff go into the building and things like that and sort of futz around with a printer, the Nassau Library System offered to send people to your building to just pick up the printer and then drive it over to Suffolk and actually drop it off to Roger and be a part of their print project too. So we tried to present a few different options for Nassau Libraries to participate in some way of like this sort of larger effort to print protective devices for first responders and hospital workers.
Yeah, and Syosset, I know we sent our MakerBots over to the printer farm too. So, you know, we immediately wanted to be involved in helping with this. I think it's really amazing that the immediate response was, okay, they're doing something amazing. We want to help too. And we just pooled all of our resources. And I think that that's, you know, really just a testament to libraries in general that we want to share and we want to help.
Yeah, we're not always quick to do things. I'll be the first to admit, and especially when it's something new, we get a little cautious. But the turnaround in Nassau, I feel like, was just a few days. Like, we were already spitting out face shields within a few days. Within a few days, we're already dropping off printers to Suffolk County. So that turnaround was, like, pretty amazing, and the printing ramped up very quickly. And people got behind it and on board with it very quickly.
So what hospitals are we pairing with? And I know, Chris, you said we're pairing also with, physical therapy offices. This is news. This is amazing.
Right. So, and again, apologies to Roger if I'm misrepresenting, but from what I have seen, from what Roger has told us in the past, so they produced for Stony Brook University Hospital. Then they started producing for the community hospital in Brookhaven, which used to be Brookhaven Memorial Hospital. And then they, I think he said something like five or six ambulance, either ambulance companies or fire departments were coming to SCLS every day to pick up protective equipment. So the concern originally was that this was going to be something that was going to be disposable. But in fact, a design that that Roger was printing, which came from Dave over at Stony Brook, is reusable and sanitizing. And what was happening was the fire departments are making it part of issued gear to their members. So here in Suffolk County, as well as most of Nassau County, I believe, they're volunteer departments. So they, whenever they got their face shields from us, they were given to the ambulance crews and the fire personnel as, you know, their issued equipment. So it can be re-sanitized and reused, and the face shields, I believe, Dave, could be swapped out, right?
Basically, it can be swapped out, and you can actually put a new shield on, and they're given actually replacement ones that you actually have to go and do. And people do that regularly. You can clean them. You just take a hand sanitizer or a wipe and clean them down, but some people replace them just as a precaution also.
Right. So SCLS was producing for the fire departments, ambulance companies, and he always has said to us, well, you know, if you know somebody who needs something, get me the contact information for that person. So I did it with St. Catherine's physical therapy, and he's done it with a number of other medical facilities that aren't necessarily hospitals to provide them with those face shields.
Didn't I hear something also that Steve Ballone, the county executive, said something, and now all these fire departments and ambulance companies are contacting him because of all the great work he's been doing and really making a difference. And I think that's really a testament to SCLS, what it's doing and how it's trying to give back to everybody who's on the front lines, the medical professionals who are doing this day in, day out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What he had done was Herculean. You know, it was amazing, along with what you're doing, what you did over at Stony Brook, Dave.
Yeah, I think we all are pitching in to make a difference. And I think that's what this is all about, is how we're getting our communities together to make a difference in this time. Even though some of us are working from home, we all are pitching in and making a difference for everybody on the front lines.
One of the questions I do want to ask, so where did you get the design for the face shield? And the physical shield and the part that holds it are two different beasts. So I wanted to kind of get into that as well.
So the way the whole design came about is we made a 3D printed rim we found out online, just one of the example ones that goes around the head, and that gives it the rim or base to put everything together. Then we put on our 3D printers. We have about 15 or 18 of them. We took three or four different designs that people had shared, and then we modified one that really worked the best, that fit most people's heads, because you had to look at circumference of heads and understand how big somebody's head is, how large is, like, I have a big head compared to other people, and how that all works. So as you figured that out, we went and came up with some designs. Then after we had them printed that Thursday and the 19th, I said, okay, how do I put this together? And I ran to Joann Fabrics, Staples, Home Depot, and started putting this stuff together from different sides. And I started with transparency paper and said, okay, what's transparency paper? Does that work? And then said, okay, and what kind of thing do I need to back, which was elastic. And I started playing with it. And within a couple hours, I had a couple different versions to put it together. And then I was showing it off to my boss at the CIO, who showed it off to the president the next morning and was like, okay, let's make 5,000 of these, which was great, except the medical professionals hadn't seen it. So we wanted to make sure the medical professionals actually were able to see what was going on and make a difference in looking at it. So we have a collaboration with them. We sent it over to the infectious disease professionals. They went and looked at it, and they didn't like some of the open holes that they felt could get in. So they wanted some foam in there. So it was more foam. And also, since we're in New York, you didn't want plastic touching somebody's head. You really want some sort of foam or fabric doing that. Where our original design was a plastic versus somebody's head. And I've seen this throughout the nation. A lot of places are okay with the plastic from the 3D printer up against somebody's head, but they didn't want to because they were worried about irritation or something, especially after the long hours they would be wearing it. So we went through a design process on that Friday, redesigned it with the doctors back and forth till about Friday evening, coming out with a design that met their needs and wanted them to produce. So that's with the design process. So we use a lot of homegrown, off-the-shelf products that you can get at any local stores. And it was beneficial that the stores were still open that weekend until they all started to close. It gave us the opportunity to be able to do that. I know if we had waited till Monday or Tuesday, by the time Saturday evening came around, Staples was closed and everything else, we wouldn't have been able to get the products and do the innovations we needed to get to the place that this all worked out.
That's really amazing. Just, you know, how everything just sort of, again, it was just like a really quick progression. And I think that, you know, one thing that I love about librarians is I think we're all very curious. So, you know, like if one thing doesn't work, we're not like, forget it. We're never going to do this again. It's okay. We're going to try to attack it at this angle and see if we can get it to work at this angle. You know, like we're, I guess I'm being a little, I'm romanticizing the term library science, but in that way where, we're testing theories and we're being scientists, you know, in that way, I suppose.
Well, you're not that far off because this is engineering. Now, look, I have zero engineering background. I studied political science and law and all that stuff. So, you know, it's always funny when people come up to me and say, oh, so you went to engineering school, right? And I just kind of laugh inside and say, no, actually, no. But this is a science. You know, it's not necessarily library science, but it is a science. It is engineering, whether you have an engineering background doing this or not, you know, we can all be engineers. We can all do this now because this tech is so good. And Dave was lucky enough to have the medical professionals there to say, you know, you need to have this, you need to have this thing and the other thing. And there's so many different designs out there for these face shield headbands that, you know, it's just good that he had that input where he didn't produce like 500 pieces and said, well, we can't use them because they're not New York State compliant or they're not medically compliant or whatever. But the idea that library land as a whole can come together and say, okay, where's the design? Let's put this together. Let's see maybe if we can even make it a little bit better. And I mean, yeah. And Dave, what you did with you know, rummaging through the craft stores and you know, coming up with all the different foam and everything was really amazing.
I have to here plug my possibly, I know it's not the most flattering image, but I always say libraries are like the Borg. You know, we see something and then we assimilate it and, you know, we make it uniquely our own. And people who are like, that's not a library's place, or even people within the field who are like, yeah, we're not going to do that, shortly realize that, yeah, we are going to do it and we're going to make it our own. So, you know, like, again, like you're going to lend out movies and libraries? No. Yes, we are. We are Borg. Resistance is futile. What? You're going to have a a Comic-Con at your, a comic book convention at your library. No, that's nobody will. Yes, they will. You know, resistance is futile. Everybody's doing this now. You should do it too. So it's the same thing with this. And this was a real quick assimilation. And I think it's because we've become such good pivoters and such good, you know, absorbers of what's going on around us that we're able to do this. So, you know, again, maybe that's not the best analogy or the friendliest analogy, but that's kind of how I always think of what we do. You know, I mean, we're not always working as a collective, like the way that we do things are not always the same. But the idea of assimilating what's going on to what we do seems to be how we operate.
Well, what's interesting, too, is with our makerspace over at Sachem, we've had a whole bunch of different libraries come and visit. And the part that I always find interesting and kind of cool is how people take ideas from what Sachem is doing, bring it to their library and their community, and they do the same thing, but they do it differently. So James, you know, saw a bunch of stuff that we're doing and they're doing, but they're doing it differently. Chris over at Great Neck came and took extensive notes and did it, and they have an amazing space over there, but it's done differently. And I think that's the beauty of what we do. We may all do things differently, and we may even be parts of different municipalities or even different counties, but at the end of the day, we all are in it for the same thing. We're here to help the patron. We're here to help our community. And whether it's on a district-wide level, a town level, a county level, or even, you know, for us for Long Island, a Long Island-wide initiative to do something that's wonderful for people without that profit margin being there, I think speaks to what libraries really do.
So the future of these efforts beyond quarantine, how do you think that this is going to, this experience and how we've jumped into it is going to exchange and expand what we do in makerspaces and libraries, period?
So from my perspective, I see us really shifting in different ways to maybe be less hands-on initially, to be able to still offer our services, but in like a takeout Chinese place way, where you order and you actually got it, to as we start then starting to open up more and more so we can have more hands-on, but at least to continue to provide services to our constituents.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because this is only going to be the beginning of what we do with regard to, if anything, this is a launch pad for us to even move further and forward even more. And like I said before, there were many libraries in Suffolk County that didn't have a 3D printer that went ahead and authorized the purchase of the 3D printers and had them sent directly to Roger over at SCLS. And now it's almost like libraries were probably, not every library, but I would say library land as a whole was probably 5 to 10 years behind the tech curve when it came to certain things. And this kind of dragged libraries into updating and moving forward. So I think the benefit of this outbreak is that libraries are now going to become even more technically savvy and be able to serve the patrons that they represent. And like I said before, when it comes to something like this, our communities as a whole here on Long Island, together, banding together when we need to, it will solidify that and help us move forward.
And I think it's important to note that NASA and Suffolk County, Long Island in general, has been hit particularly hard by the COVID-19 crisis. You know, while other places in the state are seeing numbers kind of start to decline, we're still sort of in the thick of it. So, you know, we're really with the chaos going on all around us, just working as hard as we can to serve our communities. And we know that libraries in other parts of the state and the country are doing the same thing. So I just, you know, I'm always in awe of our profession, and I'm so proud to be part of it with all of you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just fun to be part of this community.
Yeah. Now the feeling's mutual. But that's the one thing that is great about our libraries here is that it seems like we're all really on friendly terms and love sharing information.
Well, again, Roger was here in spirit, even though he couldn't make it. I think he had a drop off or somebody was coming to pick up some PPE. So he wasn't able to make it to this recording, but he was definitely here in spirit, and we thank him for getting all of this going. We thank Chris and Dave and then James from the NASA side of things. And I think one of the things we have to look forward to is where this is going to bring maker spaces in libraries and libraries in general.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, this is just, this isn't going to be the end of something. This is just the beginning of something much larger.
Have you seen or heard whispers of something new on the horizon?
Well, Dave and James and I have been, and Roger also, have been talking about how we bring makerspaces into this new COVID-19 and post-COVID-19 era with regard to social distancing and all that other stuff. So we were coming up with an idea, and we're tentatively calling it Makerspace 2.0. So the idea is, how do we have a makerspace in an era when you don't want to touch anything, when so many things are hands-on? This is an initiative that we're working on moving forward to see how we can come up with maybe some kind of standards or some kind of ideas that we can all use together to move forward. Right, Dave?
Yep, I completely agree with what Chris is thinking about. We've all been starting that discussion. We're also, I'm looking at how to come up with now with this, how do you look at helping those big challenges? And how do we go and try to engage people to solve those big challenges related to not only the pandemic, but we have energy issues, we have hunger issues in the world and whatever else. How do we energize? And then we set aside some of our technology and our solutions for those kind of solutions to really make a difference throughout the world, instead of always looking at the what we're providing for one individual person. Maybe somebody's got a bigger question and we work with them to solve that bigger question.
Excellent. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure speaking to all of you. I hope to see you all in person sooner than later, maybe from 6 feet apart, maybe with a face mask on, maybe not. One day that is what we hope for. But thanks again for being here with me virtually. This was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. And my guests were
Chris DeChristopher Arrow, Sage from Public Library and the Library Pros podcast.
David Ecker, Stony Brook University.
And James Hutter, Nassau County Library Association and Port Washington Public Library.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Thank you.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.